How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day. Hey there, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Podcasting tonight post-game, the preseason is almost over. I am here with Sam Jam Packard. I am John Corrales. We are the Rain and Jays, sorta.
We're there, kinda. I'm fully bought in. I just call myself Jam now.
Here's the thing. We got Rain and Jays. There's an S there. Like, me and Jay are the Jays, but you're like the little S after us. How about that?
Ooh, I like that.
You like that?
That works too.
That works.
Yeah, whatever works.
So you're the S in Rain and Jays. Whatever.
I'm glad to be there. I'm proud to be the S to your guys' multiple Jays.
The Celtics played a thing that looked like a basketball game against a team that sort of pretends to be an NBA basketball team, the Brooklyn Nets. They won 120-99 in a game that was mostly terrible and boring. So I will not get into a lot of that. There's not much to analyze from this game. As we heard in our podcast yesterday, we've learned everything we're going to learn pretty much from the preseason. There were no surprises in today's game. Some guys played, everybody basically played how you would expect them to play. Tyler Zeller did some good things, better things than usual, but nothing outstanding. RJ Hunter hit a shot from like almost half court, it seemed. What else was out there? But you know, everything was
James Young did decent things for 2 minute stretches.
Things. That's all right. You know, he did. It's basically all the stuff that you would expect. The starters were really good. Al Horford made me algasm again. I mean, the guy played 12 minutes and was a plus 13 in those 12 minutes. So awesome, just awesome all the way around. Let's just get into some of the other stuff that's been out there. Jay King, who is, as we are recording, diligently working in the locker room, but we will include him in this way. He wrote today on Mass Live about he's calling it the Chaotic Five, the Boston Celtics' intriguing small lineup with Al Horford. If you have not read this on masslive.com, please go do that at some point today in your spare time. It's not an exceptionally long read, but it's a very good one. And here's the thing, Sam. Every team now has to have their lineup of death, quote unquote. It starts with, obviously, and Jay makes this point in the piece, obviously there's no comparing to the Golden State lineup of death, but that's the coin, that's the phrase that's been coined, and every team now has to have that one lineup that's not your starting lineup that comes in and does these crazy things. And for Celtics, it is Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, Jay Crowder, and Al Horford that are coming in and just destroying teams defensively and going off on these big, huge runs that seems to be something that could carry on through a lot of games this season.
Yeah, with Jay Crowder playing the four and those three guards is the lineup we saw last year, but just adding Al Horford to the mix makes it that much more deadly, I guess, if we're going to call it the lineup of death. And it's been interesting to see Stevens go to Smart in for Amir Johnson as his first substitution a couple of times in this preseason. It just seems like it's a real way to kind of up the defensive pressure, and it's kind of seemed perfect. It was kind of obvious like that would be their lineup, but it's interesting that Smart's kind of the first guy in off the bench, and it kind of sets up their rotation after that and kind of allows them to play Amir Johnson as kind of, he basically comes kind of a backup big. I know, I guess that doesn't make that much sense. But he basically allows them to play Horford and Amir Johnson at separate times, and we saw that here at this game. And I think it's going to be a very dangerous lineup for Brad Stevens to use this year, just because we see what Marcus Smart can do coming in off the bench. He's all energy and just creating turnovers left and right. I think he had the perfect Marcus Smart line today. It was a plus 11 with 0 points and like four rebounds. So it's just kind of that chaos, and it's just nice to have for the Celtics to have a different look they can throw at teams. And it's kind of what Marcus Smart's role is his, he's the kind of the captain of that lineup, is the way I see it. He's the guy who comes in and brings the chaos with him.
Yeah, he played a tremendous defensive game tonight. I mean, he was just in the middle of everything. And you know, for a guy who played 13 minutes, it seemed like he made a full game's worth of impact. And like you said, no points, but that's fine. He didn't have to score points. He initiated a lot of that offense just by playing defense. You know, it's funny, and I can make this comparison with you, or this analogy. The Celtics are the flaming Mo.
Go on.
Al Horford is the fire that makes it good. You put all of the ingredients together, and now Homer is at the bar putting this together for Mo. And you put it together, and he drinks it, and he says, it's not without its charm. That's what the Celtics were. That's what the Celtics were last year. They're not without their charm. They were good. Now, you bring in Al Horford, the fire. Poof. And now you got yourself something. So I think
I'm with you 100% on this one, but the key question is, who is the crusty brand cough syrup?
Oh, that's completely Marcus Smart.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Absolutely.
Marcus Smart is that crazy, absolutely cough syrup. Absolutely. That's the secret ingredient. He's the guy that makes a lot of this possible on the perimeter, and he can not only – he can basically play defensively 1 through 4, and depending on who's out there, 1 through 5. So Horford makes the everything good because on offense – he can initiate the offense. You can go out in transition. He can grab a rebound and he can push it up. He can get a stop, and if there's a secondary break, he can if he gets a rebound and kicks it out, he can trail and hit a three. So he can put a lot of these things together. At his size, he can defend the rim effectively and not just rely on somebody like Jared Sullinger trying to get a charge. He can block shots. So, and he can switch. Everybody on that team can switch except for Isaiah Thomas. That's a little bit of a weak spot there, but it's not really an issue. You need him out there, obviously, for his playmaking and scoring ability. So, but yeah, Marcus Smart is the guy that allows so much of this because he can start on a point guard and just keep on switching all the way down the line. And that makes the defense just deadly. So I like that lineup. I really am very curious to see how it works against good teams, a non-Atlantic Division opponent for once. But that was if you haven't read that piece, again, go to masslive.com. Check out Jay's piece on the chaotic lineup. Yeah, that was a good piece. And I'm really looking forward to. Of all the things in the preseason, that's one of my carryovers to the regular season that I'm really looking forward to see how that goes. Another piece that was out there was the Kevin O'Connor piece in The Ringer, talking about Danny Ainge and the Celtics approach. And one of the things that stuck out to me was the next summer and the ability to make a trade, the ability to sign a guy outright, the patience that's involved, the versatility that the Celtics have put themselves, this position that they put themselves into, where they have options. They can make a trade if a free agent doesn't work out. They could do both. They can go sign a free agent and make a trade. Or they could not sign anybody, not make a trade, and just get a potential top three draft pick and just go in that route. So, first of all, I just want to commend Kevin O'Connor, who's crushing it, and say it's a good piece on all of the different ways the Celtics have set themselves up. Secondly, I'm focused now on what has become my number one target next summer, and that is Blake Griffin. I think that's the guy. That's the guy the Celtics need to get. You throw him as a free agent signing into this team, and holy shit, do you get yourself a team.
Blake Griffin's kind of scary, underrated. People will forget that he was, what was he, third in the MVP voting a couple of years ago? There's been stretches of like half a season where he's been one of the top three best players in basketball. And I would agree that that definitely should be a top target. I don't know how realistic it is, just because, and this is kind of some wild conjecture, but it seems like Blake Griffin is definitely someone who's taken to living in Los Angeles. He's the type of guy who like loves to go to comedy shows. Have you even seen him doing stand up? He's like, it seems like he likes to be in the scene and like in Kia commercials. And I don't know if that's necessarily something Boston can offer him. But then again, if you can just offer him the lineup, basically the lineup of death or the current Celtics roster, add him, it's like a surefire shot to knock off the Cavs and I would say compete against the Warriors moving forward. So I would think that would make sense as the number one target. I just don't know how willing Griffin would be to leave LA.
Well, a couple of things there. First of all, let me just say this. If Blake Griffin were to come to the Boston Celtics, that would be must-see basketball, especially with him and Jaylen Brown a year into his career. Think about all of the alley-oops. You talk about Lob City. That would just be amazing to watch. And I know a great way you guys can get tickets to those games. That is the SeatGeek app, the smartest, easiest way to find tickets to the basketball games you're looking for. If you want to go out, look, it's Patriots season, or wherever you are watching this game, you want to go to a football game, go check out those games up close, in person. Nothing like being there for the biggest plays of the year. And with SeatGeek, never easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for a great value. In fact, one of us on this show just used the SeatGeek app.
Damn right I did. It was a Friday night. I was hanging out with some friends in Philadelphia at a bar, and we were talking about the Sixers, and we said we should go to a Sixers game. And not 4 minutes later, I had a couple of tickets, got them all through the SeatGeek app, used the code LOCELTICS. And now me and my buddies, we're going to go see the Utah Jazz when they come to town on November 7th. Going to be able to use the actual SeatGeek app as the tickets and just get you – like that's how I'm getting into the game. It couldn't have been easier. So if you want easy way to get tickets, we got a great deal because it's one, we use the SeatGeek app and they tell you which deals are the best. And two, it's the Philadelphia 76ers, so prices were not that much.
So you would say that SeatGeek gave you the best bang for your buck?
Absolutely. We got focused in on the greenest little dot and got the best deal. It was wonderful.
All right. So that's great. So you've used it, I've used it, and you at home or in your car or at the gym, wherever you're listening to this, you can use it too to get into whatever, a game, a show, concert, if you're somewhere where there's a play, whatever it is, if they're selling tickets for it, it's probably on the SeatGeek app. So here's what you do. You get your $20 rebate like Sam did. You download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter LO Celtics. You buy your tickets and you get $20 back after you've made your first purchase. Very simple. So do that. Download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LO Celtics today. And you can use that next year when the Celtics get Blake Griffin. Back to our discussion about that. I think about this lineup. We're just these guys that we have now. And you just throw out Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, Al Horford, Blake Griffin. That's pretty badass, because now you've got still some premier defenders and you've got a guy in Griffin that you can count on, that he can do so much on the floor. He's extended his range. He can back guys down. Obviously, he can go up and just jump over people. It'd just be an amazing thing to watch to have him alongside. And you then you'd get a sort of Horford Millsap-ish dynamic, except instead of Millsap, you're throwing Blake friggin' Griffin out there.
Yeah, that's what I just was thinking about. Is there's oftentimes when Griffin is playing with the Clippers that the lane is kind of clogged just because he's playing with DeAndre Jordan, who's got no range, and he has so much less room to operate and really reach his kind of full offensive potential. But you stick him in a lineup where the other big is Al Horford, who can extend out to three, and you just open up the paint for Blake Griffin, who's one, really mastered his kind of mid-range shot. It's something he's been working on in the recent years. Just to go to work in the paint and in the post, he would be so dangerous. We already know the Celtics are going to have a great defense this year, but if you add that much scoring, their offensive efficiency would be out of this world. It'd be unbelievable. It'd must watch TV every single game.
Absolutely. Now, the big question, like you brought up a minute ago, was would he actually leave Los Angeles? And there's no guarantee that he would leave Los Angeles. Now, if Kevin Durant had stayed in Oklahoma City, I would have thought there was a real threat of him going home to Oklahoma and playing in that kind of lineup. And all of a sudden, that would have just been hell on earth. But now that that's not there, I don't know what the appeal is. I don't know if there's that level of appeal for him to go home at all. Maybe not. Maybe there never was, but I'm just kind of guessing. Staying in LA, sure, you're absolutely a good point. If he likes that lifestyle and he trusts in the Clippers to kind of turn things around, then, and you know, guys rarely move. Kevin Durant notwithstanding, guys generally don't switch teams at that level. But if he's looking at the rest of the NBA, you have to think that the Celtics are at least going to get a meeting. They are at least going to be on that list of teams that, okay, I may consider leaving the Clippers. Who's out there that I could go to that would give me at least justification? There's the obviously ready-made teams. If Cleveland or another contender, San Antonio, one of those good teams that's like always knocking on the door, sure, those could probably be in the mix, but the Celtics are right there. They're obviously, we can talk about the history and blah, 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 but forget that. Throw that all out. The team is young. The team has a lot of key pieces that they would be keeping. The continuity would be really, really strong. He could join a team without them giving up a ton of players. He's got great defensive players. He's got some decent offensive players out there. He'd clearly be coming in to be the man. He wouldn't be stepping back. He wouldn't be sharing any of the spotlight. He'd basically be the same guy. And meanwhile, Cleveland would be on their downswing a little bit. Each year, LeBron gets older and time is undefeated. I'm sorry. At some point, that's going to start making an impact. And you throw that Celtics team out there with an improved, younger core, and who knows, we'll see how this year progresses. But man, I just can't stop thinking, like, that would be ideal. And on top of everything, you get to keep a guy like Crowder, which he's just such a key piece, underrated key piece to this team. I would love to be able to do this and keep him and not give up so much of what he does, just energy-wise and defensively. I think that'd just be ideal for the Celtics.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, and the thing that makes the Celtics the most appealing as a free agent destination is that they would have the max cap room to go out and sign Blake Griffin, not change their core at all, keep Jaylen Brown, and then potentially take another top three pick next year. If you're talking about a team like Cleveland, they just signed J.R. Smith. They have Tristan Thompson, long-term contracts. Kevin Love's absurd money. They'd have to break up some of that core. San Antonio as well would probably have to part ways with the Marcus Aldridge. It would be the best team option and best basketball option if he wanted to come. I just think the question is he willing to leave L.A.? Because like you said, free agents don't leave. Their team can offer them the most money, can offer them that extra year. It's going to be tough. Is this the thing? Do you get frustrated if you're Blake Griffin? Because the Clippers have been close for the past 3 or 4 years with basically the same core. And they've had a problem where they have spending all their money on basically their three main guys, maybe four main guys if they include J.J. Redick, and they just don't have enough help on the bench. And so how long can you keep kind of just knocking on that door and hoping that your that core of four is going to put it together without having any money to kind of put it around them? So maybe Blake Griffin gets frustrated. We've known he's prone to get frustrated because he punched that trainer in the face in Toronto last year. So maybe he just decides he needs to change the scenery, and the Celtics would be a perfect destination.
Yeah, look, a couple of things have to happen. We have to see, first of all, how the Clippers season goes. We have to see if that becomes another frustrating situation. Do they lose in the first round again? Does something go wrong again? And just make you wonder, is this ever going to happen here? Like, that's going to be one big thing for Blake Griffin. And as much as he might like the lifestyle, you have to think that guys at this level, they all want to win. So what's going to happen with Chris Paul? He's a free agent. Is he going to get frustrated and go somewhere else? Now, as much as he may feel beholden to the Clippers, he's spent half his career somewhere else. So he's much more willing probably to go somewhere else to finish his career. And he's at a point where he's looking for a title. He wants a ring. And if he goes out in the first or second round again, there's no way. I really don't think that Chris Paul is going to stay with the Clippers. He's going to need to go to a team that's more ready-made so he can actually lead someone somewhere to a title. So if he leaves, then why would you stay in LA? This whole thing could fall apart real fast for the Clippers. So just something to watch, something to keep an eye on. And maybe we should just leave it there, because I'm sure I'm going to bring this up again multiple times, because I've completely, fully locked on. That's the podcast name.
Ooh,
locked on,
well done,
to Blake Griffin as the free agent target, my primary free agent target this coming summer. We haven't even started the season. I'm already looking at next summer. All right.
That's what the preseason will do to you, man.
Yes, because that game sucked. All right. We ask you to continuously send us questions, comments, whatever it is. Rainin' Jays, hashtag Rainin' without the G. Rainin' Jays, hashtag on Twitter. And Sam begged today, please. So, and you answered. So let's just jam right through these. Daniel at Rafe. Do you still think it's not possible for Smart to be a worse shooter this season? He looks pretty bad. Yeah.
Yeah, so much for that narrative about him fixing his shot, and we're seeing the slow motion videos of him at practice, because it hasn't gotten that much better. I could still see him being like a low 30s from three, and it wouldn't surprise me. I don't think it really, like, as much as you would like to see him take that next step and be that effective shooter, because it would really elevate his game, it doesn't really take away that much from like the kind of impact that Marcus Smart makes. It's like, it would be nice, but I'm not by no means expecting him to be a great shooter this season.
Yeah, it's, I will say, and just to give him the benefit of the doubt, a couple of things. One, it's preseason, it's early. He's been in a bunch of different lineups. He's not in a groove that he would normally be in. He's not playing a ton of minutes. So a lot of times he started out 0-for-3 early, and then he would hit 2 or 3 in a row later in the game. So he's not getting his full minutes. He's not getting the full reps and rotations with the guys he'd normally be with. So that's just Marcus Smart's game. He tends to hit his three-pointers later. So I will give him that. And secondly, if he truly is changing his shot, then there's a lot of thinking that goes along with that. When you're out there, you're concentrating on doing certain things with your shot, and you're not just letting it fly. That takes time. You got to get into a point where you're comfortable with that new shooting form. So I agree that there is no evidence right now that he will fix this shot. I am, however, because I'm generally a positive person. I'm going to give him a little bit more time before we really shut that down for those things that I said. I think let's give him November and December and the regular reps with the regular guys and see how that goes before we start saying, all right, forget it. So, but thanks for the question. Sam Sheehan, couple of tweets from him. The real question, I'll start with this one. Sticking with Marcus Smart. Smart can make plays and draw fouls. Rozier can shoot better than Smart. What's the case against Rozier off the ball? This is something that we talked about last night with Jay King. I made my statement. I like Smart handling the ball. I like Rozier off the ball. I think there's going to be some mixing, but I love that idea. I think Smart is able to drive and pass pretty well, and I think Rozier has the better jumper, so him coming off of picks and catching and shooting and then putting the ball on the floor, I like that idea.
Yeah, the last part of your statement is coming off the catching the ball and then putting on the floor really kind of sold me on it. There was one play tonight where it was Rozier in the corner and he did a couple of dribble moves, one behind the back, step back jumper.
That was sweet.
Which it was great, and it really shows what Rozier can do with the ball in his hands. I really just don't think you have to choose one or the other. I think you're right that it's going to be back and forth. I wouldn't want to limit Terry Rozier just by strictly making him an off-ball guard, because I think he has made strides in his kind of playmaking in the pick and roll. And we just saw he has that mid-range game and that kind of that aggressiveness where he, with the ball in his hands, he is dangerous. So I just don't think you need to choose either or. Just go with both.
You know, sometimes I feel like this is almost like the debate over the leadoff hitter in baseball, where everybody talks about that stuff, and then the counter argument is always, yeah, but you're only leading off once. And then afterwards, you're just in the mix. And in this regard, you're bringing the ball up, but then you're passing it, and then you're part of the offense. And so, yes, there is some discussion over who should be handling the ball more. But really, on this team, with those guys out there, Smart can walk the ball up the floor or jog the ball up the floor and make decisions. But once he fires it off to whomever is on the wing, and then he just runs and just becomes part of the offense, and then at that point, he's off the ball now. So it does, I think sometimes this conversation can get a little bit overblown, but just in general, I think Smart is better dribbling and then making decisions. And he's good at driving because he's strong. This is the same point I was making last night. And he can take the contact and he can get to the line. And he's a much better passer than he's given credit for. Rozier can play off the ball, catch, and then if he's open, can just shoot. I trust him to shoot the ball more. But then at that point, if he wants to put the ball on the floor and kind of suddenly become the point guard, he absolutely can do that. So that's where the mixing comes in. You don't have to search for either one. Whoever's there, if I grab the rebound and I turn around and I see Rozier, fine, boom, go. They can both bring it up. But
yeah, that's a big point I wanted to make, is that especially with this Celtics team, there's not waiting around so we can give it to the point guard to start the offense. If they're playing the defense and they're getting turnovers, or they're just starting from defensive rebounds, really anyone can take it up. There's no pause to think about who that point guard is going to be in the moment. So if you can have on that second unit both Rozier and Smart just be able to push the basketball and play with speed, then it's beneficial. There's no need to kind of overthink it and just be like, well, this is the primary ball handler. It's no, whoever gets the rebound needs to push it, and both players need to be able to kind of play within the offense after that.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like the Rondo days where he'd come rushing back to get the ball. Like, that's
exactly,
you don't have to have that. Okay. So also from Sam Sheehan, I want to say this about Sam, that he's got the best Twitter avatar out there. It is the Arrested Development three chicken dance thing going on. If you, huh. But and it's so funny because Job's not in this one. This is the one where I'm just looking at it. It's cha 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 cha, and Lindsay's in the back going cha chi cha chi cha. It's just hilarious. I just love that there's, and then the mom is, Lucille is in the back doing her thing. A kookly doodly doo.
I didn't know you could make a GIF as your avatar.
It's so great.
I'm always very impressed.
Watch this the whole time. Oh, all right. Anyway, so Sam, the fun question is the best Kelly Linick doctor conspiracy. And he says his is Kelly Linick made him up because he has no health insurance, which I wouldn't believe because he's Canadian and everybody in Canada has health insurance. So
yeah, but that's only for a Canadian doctor, though. Maybe that doesn't transfer over to a fancy New York surgeon.
Maybe he didn't realize that. So if you missed yesterday's rant, I'm just apoplectic over Kelly Linick not being able to see a doctor to get his shoulder cleared to play, where somehow the only guy he can see is in New York, and he wasn't there when they were in New York. What the hell? What about the team doctor? They're back in Boston. They got great team doctors. There's somebody, I forget who it was, somebody tweeted me that he had shoulder surgery from that same doctor. I had shoulder surgery from that same office. It was a different surgeon, but I had shoulder surgery from the same team doctors, that same office. There are people there who know how to look at a shoulder and fix a shoulder and tell if it's fixed. Why the hell does this guy in New York have anything to do with it? So anyway,
maybe Kelly Olynyk's got like a real big like doctor phobia, and this is the one guy who can really go to him. But he's had shoulder issues ever since. Oh no, he ripped Kevin Love's shoulder out. No, but didn't he get a shoulder injury that series too?
Nothing major.
I feel like he's had like kind of a recurring arm injury, but maybe I'm just imagining that. But it makes no sense. Boston is like the best medical destination in all of the country. And then Danny Ainge came out today and said, like, gave some what I think was like BS excuse, saying that like Olynyk wasn't progressing enough that appointment wouldn't have mattered anyways. Well, it's like, no, if he could have got the appointment, he would have gone to the appointment.
So my conspiracy is that Olynyk just wanted to go to Comic-Con and dress up in like Thor cosplay, and instead he's like, oh yeah, doctor wasn't there. Meanwhile, he's still like got the Thor getup on. Yeah,
that would be awesome.
Doctor wasn't
turned
there
into a bad boy.
That would be, yeah, that's my, that's
not awesome, completely. It'd be mildly amusing and then just frustrating because eventually they're gonna need him to play basketball for them.
Yeah, I don't know. I am just beside myself over this, though. It doesn't make any sense. I feel like it's one of those things that I feel like there's something more to it, and it shouldn't be, but it just doesn't make any sense. At Green Max, seems like the bench mob has sided with RJ in the battle for the 15th spot, which, I don't know, maybe 15th spot.
I wasn't paying enough attention to the bench mob, except when they played Geno in the preseason. I was trying to see if any of them were dancing, and they still weren't. That was one of my biggest frustrations with last year's team, is that no one really embraced Geno as much as KG did.
No, that's never.
But you don't have to love it as much as KG, but it's still a good disco song, and you're up by 20, so you can at least dance during the timeout. Everyone was just kind of stone-faced.
Yeah.
I never understood it.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess it's just, I think we're spoiled because KG enjoyed it so much. Lots of questions here with the last spot at Rifesy again. Does excelling against Nets scrubs win Young a roster spot? Could Green get cut? No, I don't think Green's getting cut. As far as the 15th spot goes, I think all things being equal, it's probably going to go to Hunter because he's just cheaper. He's got another year under contract, and it's probably easier to cut or trade James Young when It there's no real separation here. So, but in the end, it's the 15th spot. It doesn't matter. We're trying to figure out who has the right to sit there and get DNPs every day.
Yeah, it's people have gotten very invested in Young and Hunter because they were first round draft picks, and so they kind of think more of them. Our main man Danger Cart's kind of on the cut Gerald Green bandwagon just because the team would have more control just based on the contracts of just having control over the rookie contracts of Hunter and Young. At this point, I really don't know what's going to happen. I wouldn't be surprised if anyone got cut. I think they're really going to test the market, the trade market for I wouldn't be surprised if it was Young, Hunter, even Mickey, and just probably try to get back the best haul. At this point, I don't see any of those guys being huge pieces for the Celtics moving forward.
Yeah,
They were nice in the kind of the development stage. Everyone got hyped when Jordan Mickey came in and blocked a few guys, but there's not people you're actually building around. So yeah. It doesn't really matter in the end.
We always get attached to these guys. We always think, oh, if only they get a chance, if only they get a chance. And it just never works out that way. And maybe they just need a chance, and maybe that chance will come somewhere else. But I think Ainge probably wants to trade a bunch of these guys. Even if it gets him back some second round picks, then he could just do this all over again. He could pull another Demetrius Jackson and Ben Bentel and give us other guys that we can get attached to irrationally. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the next few days some trade rumors or an actual trade pops up where Ainge sends one of those guys to, I don't know, Phoenix. Where, you know, he's already got a good relationship with those guys, and they're trying to do something, and maybe they could develop guys better than the Celtics do. So I like this idea.
Send him out to Doc in LA. They definitely need some help on the wing. Who knows?
I would not be surprised if he did that. I like at JD Hollings' idea. Should there be a ladder match with a contract dangling above for the Celtics' 15th roster spot? I love that. I'm in. So it would be like a tornado ladder match, because we'd have to get – it wouldn't just be Hunter and Young. We'd got to get everybody in there.
Mickey would have to be in there. I think you throw in Zeller just for some good times. Gerald Green is a feisty vet. Gerald Green might just jump up and snatch the contract because he can jump that high. I don't know. It'd be – I'm all for hypothetical violence in between teammates. It seems fun.
That, but we would need like some sort of heel turn. There'd be some weird alliances. It would have to be something like
Stevens would have to take a chair to someone.
Oh man, that could. I don't know if Stevens is capable of a heel turn like that.
That's what makes it so good, is no one would expect it. He'd come out, James Young's about to get that contract, and Stevens is going to pull the ladder out from under him and then let RJ Hunter get up there.
That's
my heel turn.
That's Hulk Hogan joining NWO level heel turn. That's like crazy.
Hey, that's what I want.
I like it. I like it. It's outside the box. But then Danny Ainge would have to come out with the microphone and overrule him and say, no, Young is out. You get Hunter or something. Like, somebody would have to pull the Vince McMahon, right?
Who knows? Would it be Adam Silver? I mean, he's not shy about meddling in the affairs of teams in terms of players and forcing GMs on players on teams. So who knows?
One of the actual owners. Maybe it would be one of the owners. Maybe it'd just be Wick. I mean, Wick's a nice guy and everything, but you know, in this scenario, he could just be like the rich owner guy, and he could use his championship ring that he's always flashing to like knock somebody out.
Yeah, no, really, anything's at play at this point. So, you know, write the Celtics, write them a letter, just let them know this is how you want it to be decided, because I think it'll be more entertaining than having to watch another preseason basketball game.
Last question from Vinny at Sailboat Studios. If the Celtics roster were force users, who'd most likely be a Sith? Oh, back to the
okay. You're gonna have to help me out on this one because I'm not the biggest Star Wars guy.
Oh, boy.
The Siths are the evil ones,
yes,
correct?
Yes, the Sith are Darth Vader, Darth Maul. All of your Darths are Sith. They're the bad guys. The Jedi are your Luke Skywalkers of the world. So,
okay.
Who would use the Force for bad or for personal gain? That's the thing. The Sith use the Force for their own personal gain and advancement. So which of these guys on the team would be most likely to do that? That's a good question.
I don't know. That's tough. No one really stands out as an inherently selfish and or evil persona. So I'm going to have to go with Tyler Zeller just because I can see him just festering in the locker room, not getting any playing time and just getting angrier and angrier and angrier. And finally, there's one day he's going to snap and just that's when he becomes a Sith. That's when he turns against the Jedi.
Interesting. You know, I can see that. There's a lot of hate growing in him, maybe. Like he's like initially he's got good and then the frustration just boils over.
Yeah, isn't that a whole thing about Star Wars? It's just like knowing you have this talent and then not knowing like how to deal with it and all these
Tyler Zeller's the man. Feel the hate flow through you. The hate is what fuels the dark side of the Force. So,
and in looking at Twitter, there's certainly a lot of hate directed towards Tyler Zeller recently. So if he's going to feel it flowing through him, he's my main nominee.
Yeah, I never would have thought that. And when you said it, I was like, get out of here. But man, I really like where you're going with that. That really makes sense.
No one else really makes sense to me. There's no one else who feels like they're slighted, and everyone else seems very, very committed to team basketball. So saying that they're a Sith doesn't make much sense to me.
Right. I might go with Marcus Smart just because
of the flopping.
Because of the flopping. Yeah, exactly. There's no he's trying to fool people. There's no – a true Jedi wouldn't do that. A true Jedi would – just wouldn't act in that manner. I think Marcus Smart with his flopping and flailing is most likely to be in that Sith type of mindset. He's trying to do things for his own personal gain. He's trying to use mind tricks to trick you into giving him what he wants. I think he'd do it. I think Marcus Smart is most likely to just chop a fool in half if it meant getting where he needs to be. Like he's just intense.
I can't argue with there. The kind of the deception, but the deception that no one really likes, that kind of feels like an evil Sith mood. Now was Darth Maul also a Sith?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to Okay.
All right. Your Darths. Any Darth at somebody, you know, Darth Phil in accounting is a Sith.
So Darth is an official Sith title.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you excited for the new Star Wars that's like coming out soon? Have you seen that trailer?
It's very, very excited about that. It's kind of different. The backstory. It's a prequel in some ways, but it's just a lot of characters that it's not your typical Star Wars movie. It's just a bunch of different people doing different things. And it's kind of occurring at the same time as some of the other Star Wars stuff that we'd already seen. So it's prequel in a technical sense, but it just comes from such a different angle that it's really interesting to me.
Yeah, I heard it was like less kind of I think magical is the wrong word, but it's less like that and less about the Force and more so like kind of like an army strategic war all about like trying to get information about the Death Star, which sounded pretty cool to me. It's just kind of to be in that universe, but kind of just talk about like kind of all the strategy that goes into that battle. I'm all in. As someone who's not a big Star Wars guy, I heard the description. I was like, that sounds like something I could get into.
I think that it takes place essentially. So the beginning of that first Star Wars movie, which is Episode 4, really the first of the Star Wars movies, when Luke Skywalker is looking at the two suns, that. This movie is kind of taking place adjacent to that time frame where they will pick up this new movie before the Luke Skywalker story, but by the end of the movie, that's where like the beginning of that other movie will have happened. You know what I mean? Time-wise, because these guys are going out to get the plans, and Luke, by the end of the movie, they have gotten the plans. So it's kind of happening sort of before, but then also at the same time as that first movie. I'm sure this has been really riveting for Celtics fans.
I think they deserve it after sitting through 48 minutes of close to unwatchable not 40 minutes, at least 24 minutes of unwatchable basketball. They deserve to take their mind off it with some good Star Wars analysis.
We'll see. I'm a big Star Wars fan. I'm not gonna pretend there are other much bigger Star Wars fans out there. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm probably a 7.5 or so. So there's definitely room for my geekiness to go beyond. Like, I don't have costumes or anything like that. I don't go to Comic-Con dressed as Darth Vader, but I kind of would if I had the chance. Like, it's not something that I would specifically set out to do, but if somebody said, hey, we got this Darth Vader thing, you're tall, would you want to do that? I'd be like, yes, I would. So there's room between what I'm actively trying to do and what I would be willing to do and what most people would not be willing to do. So just throw that out there, ladies.
So if anyone has a Darth Vader costume they need a tall guy to fill in the upcoming months, you know who to call.
If you got
John Corrales.
Yes, if you got something for a 6.5-foot guy to get into, I can do it. I'll be your Darth Vader, no problems. Hey, if anybody is still listening to the show, thank you. Really appreciate it. And here we were thinking that there'd be like 20 minutes of this show and we'd just be done. And we've gone on for like 45 minutes. So fun times. And then we got one more of these shitty preseason games to go. And then the regular season. I love how all summer long we're like, please, basketball, come back. And then before the first game, the first preseason game, we're like, yes, basketball is back. And like a minute and a half into that first preseason game, we're like, oh, right.
This season was different because we had about like 3 or 4 algasms.
Yes, yes.
And then once the kind of the glow wore off, then we realized, no, this is still preseason basketball.
Yes. But we thank you guys for listening to the show throughout. We hope we have at least entertained you for a little while. And yeah. Hey. Please download the SeatGeek app. Remember, enter the promo code LOCELTICS to get $20 back after your first purchase. Remember to subscribe to our show if you haven't. You search Locked On Celtics. Subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating if you have not done that. Because, look, if you don't subscribe and give us ratings, how are you going to get all of this awesome Star Wars analysis every day? Jeez. So
it's not going to be every day.
Well, you know,
every other day.
Most days. All right, so that's it. I'm sparing you the rest of this. Thank you all for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.